That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, here to do the thing that I do best, and that is to talk about money. It's that thing we weren't taught in school, we weren't taught in university, we weren't taught our graduate scheme, we weren't taught any kind of job whatsoever. So we decided to make an entire show about it. I think that's a pretty good idea if you ask me. And on the show, every single week, we do what we do best, and that is to teach you everything you need to know about the topic of money. And here is how we like to break it down. Number one, what's going on in the news? What's going on that actually affects the money in your back pocket? Absolutely vital stuff, if you ask me. None of that boring news, none of that Trump stuff, none of that. I don't even know what else is going on in the news, but I don't really read it, to be honest. When I say none of that Trump stuff, Trump might come into it, but the Trump stuff that's relevant to your cash, to your money, in other words, tariffs, which I'll get onto in a second. And then we like to bring in a range of guests, interesting people, famous faces, experts to share their own personal finance advice and stories. And this week we've got Faith Archer, who is a money blogger from With Much More, With Less. And also Natalie Scott, who is an award-winning money coach, to talk about all things money dysmorphia. Heard of it? I hadn't. So let's see how that conversation goes. Anyway, shall we kick off with the news? I think that's a pretty good idea, if you ask me. Starting off, I did say I wasn't going to bring Trump into it and then immediately bring Trump into a topic of conversation. But in particular, not great news for growth and development. Should you care? Yes, you should care. But overall, what's going on? So the global economic growth has been downgraded by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. What a name that is. We're just going to call them the OECD from now on. Due to the impact from US President Donald Trump's tariffs and how they are now coming into effect. So, growth. Growth in general seems such like a vague term, but what does it actually mean? How does it actually work? So GDP might be something you've heard of. Gross domestic product? Yeah, I think it's product. Basically shows you, is an economy growing? Every country has one, and it's kind of measured on an annual basis, on a monthly basis. We kind of like to measure it, because if we have two quarters, so two periods of 3 months, that have their GDP in negative, so back to back, that is where a recession comes in, which you've all heard of. We don't want recessions. Recessions are where economies are shrinking, so we like growth. Well, the good news is, growth is still forecast. We're still looking at a global positive growth and a UK positive growth. It's just been downgraded. So what are the numbers? Well, apparently the UK economy will now only grow 1.4% this year, as opposed to 1.7% previously anticipated. Not great for Rachel Reeves, whose entire election and current campaign is around growth, 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 growth. Not the reduction in growth. And next year it's going to be 1.2%, which is lower than the 1.3% that was forecast before President Trump took over the office. Well, Rachel Reeves, Mrs. Reeves, has fought back, and she has said in her exact wording, Europe is, well, Europe's fastest growing G7 economy over the coming years will be the UK, second only to the US. So she's fighting back. Kind of to me sounds like that person that's like, oh, like when you know when you're in school and you're misbehaving, but you're not misbehaving anywhere near as bad as anyone else in the class, and like you get told off, but you're like, miss, but look at them over there, they're doing much worse than me. That kind of feels like what that comment is, in my opinion. It's like, we are still the second best. We're not great, but we're second best, so look at everyone else that's doing worse than us. So what's going on, and why is growth being reduced? Well, Donald Trump, Mr. Trump, I'm actually kind of like laughing in my head that I said we weren't going to talk about Donald Trump, and then he's the first topic of conversation today. But essentially, he's been talking about tariffs for a very long time. And actually, earlier this month, a 25% tariff on all steel and aluminium imports into the US came into effect. Now, what does that actually translate to? Well, a lot of you who do invest, if any of you invest listening to this show, might have noticed that your investments have not been doing so well. I think there's been an 8% drop in the S&P 500 in the past month alone. A lot of nervous people. I'm getting DMs the whole time. What should I do? Is this it? Like, should I sell everything? I mean, like, this is the time where I would actually turn that money show into, like, that meditation show. And what we would all do together is deep breath in. Should we do it right now? Let's do it. Okay, go. Hold. and out. We're just going to do one because that was a weird thing to do on radio, blowing into a microphone where I can hear my own breath very loudly. What I'm trying to say is, like, relax. If you're an investor and you're seeing all of these effects because of all of the changes that are going on in the economy and growth and all that kind of stuff, and you're seeing your investments drop down, just take a think to yourself and have a little think just for half a second as to why you started investing in the first place and what are your intentions with investing. Are you a trader? Do you buy and sell constantly? Or are you an investor? How do you plan to put this away for at least 5 years, if not 10 years, 15, 20 years? In which case, this should just be another blip on your investing journey. It's happened before. It happened a few months ago when someone in China decided to design an AI model that could compare to the US ChatGPT for a fraction of the price. It happened a couple of years ago during COVID when there was a crash then. It happened in 2008 where there was a financial crash. It happened 25 years ago at the dot-com bubble burst. It's happened. It's recovered. Here's a fun fact for you. The market has recovered 100% of the time. So if you're worried, maybe just think about that. Oh, what was the saying I heard? When in doubt, zoom out. That's a great one. When in doubt, zoom out. Back to the tariffs. What are they? What's going on and why are they affecting growth? Well, it's a bit like this. I mean, most people see them as a zero-sum game. And the reason is, imagine I, country A, and putting a tariff on you, country B. What do you think you, country B, are going to think? You're going to think, well, that's not fair. Why do you get to have now a more competitive advantage on our trading? In response, I'm going to put a tariff on you. But you know what? I'm not going to put a tariff back on you on the same steel and aluminium because we're an exporter of that. We don't really import that from you. What do we import from you? I don't know, cheese and tomatoes. So we're going to put a tariff on cheese and tomatoes back from you. Then you're going to look back at me and be like, hey, we tried to get a competitive advantage. Now we're being punished for it. We're going to put a tariff back on you. So on and so forth. Everything gets more expensive when it's imported. And the consumer, at the end of the day, ends up being the hard done by. In real terms, Trump has put this 25% tariff on steel and aluminium. And the full effect of these tariffs are kind of haven't been felt yet because we're waiting for these EU retaliatory taxes on US goods because Donald Trump has said that he will put a 200% tariff on EU alcohol, including wine and champagne, if the EU start to retaliate. So let the trade wars begin, everyone. Prefer them not to begin, but it's just a very interesting time in the world. And all of this means that growth output is being reduced. What else is going on? Let's move away from DJT out in the US. That's Donald J. Trump, in case you didn't know. Someone said that to me the other day and I thought it sounded cool, so I thought I'd try it on radio. Does it sound cool? Don't know. Let me know. Anyway, 3 in 10 people are being put off major purchases because of financial worries. So how worried are you guys in terms of your finances? Because apparently 3 out of 10 of you aren't buying so much stuff. The actual statistic is 28% of people are put off buying things like cars, furniture, electronics. And it gets even worse because we've got 2.1 million households are missing out on essential payments. We're talking bills. We're talking mortgages. We're talking, I don't know, council tax, credit cards, loans. And that was in the month going from the 17th of January up until the 17th of February. And that is also up 500,000 people on the month before that. And then just to kind of go into a little bit more of the details as to how many people are kind of being put off major purchases or can't afford things at the moment. The proportion of mortgage holders missing payments has increased to 3.4%, which is the highest since August 2024. Very much still showing that we are in this cost of living crisis. More bad news, 51% of households are admitting to adjusting how they're going to cover essential spending by cutting back on other things. For example, they're dipping into savings, they're selling possessions, they're borrowing, and that's up from 45% the month before. And we've got consumer confidence almost at an all-time low for 7 months with a score of -8 this month, and 31% of adults are expecting their finances to worsen. But the good news, I'd like to put a little, what's it called, a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. 23% of you are anticipating improvement in your finances. Good for you. I like that positivity and that outlook. But overall, what it seems is people are cutting back. People are really struggling to basically keep up with the cost of living, the cost of life. The only thing that I would say to you off the back of that is that hopefully you can readjust yourself now so you can get yourself back to that baseline and start again from then. So on the one hand, we should all be constantly reevaluating what we're spending money on to think, are we living well beyond our means? Are we living within our means? Are we living below our means? The ideal with personal finance is always to live below your means so that you can save a little bit extra for yourself down the line. if you're living beyond your means, this is probably the time to readjust that before you get hit by these statistics. Because a lot of people, for example, mortgage holders who are getting hit the hardest are those that are coming off the low rates that we had throughout the 2010s up to 2020 and are now being put onto much higher interest rates, much higher monthly charges, and therefore now struggling because they hadn't adjusted their spending according to these higher rates. So if that's you, or if that could be you in the next year or two, now is the time to readjust your spending so that when it does hit and when costs do go up specifically for you, you are able to adapt immediately to what is going on. Don't wait for it to happen, you know, like that overnight. Do it, make it gradual, make it happen over the next few months, and start to live within your means now at this point. And lastly, this is a crazy story. If I was to ask you, how much do you think you need on average as a deposit to buy a house in London? If you said £50,000, you would be £319,000 shy. The average earner needs £369,000 for a house deposit in London as of the current statistics. So let me break it down for you to help you understand. The average salary currently is £47,086. The average amount being lent is about 4.5 times your income. And the average property is £581,310. Do the maths, do the multiplications. And on top of the amount you'll get as a mortgage, you are going to need £369,423 for the average home in London. Did someone say housing's still affordable? I don't think so. That is 12 times the average income. To buy a property in London, you need 12 times your average income. And for those of you that live in areas like Kensington and Chelsea or Westminster, you are the most screwed. £884,000 needed for a deposit, £645,000 in Westminster and £608,000 in Camden. The most affordable borough are those of you that live in Barking and Dagenham. You would only need £191,373 if you were trying to buy a property on your own. But don't worry to those of you, because those of you that are sitting here thinking, I'm in a couple, I'm going to be buying with someone else. Well, dual income applicants, you're still going to need a high deposit. On average, £193,000. If you both earn the average salary and want to buy the average price home in London. In 14 boroughs, you're going to need more than £200,000. And there are only 4 boroughs in the entirety of London where you can get away with that 10% deposit. But like I said, the average right now is somewhere between 12 and 13 times the average salary. How are you going to get on the housing market? Well, you're going to listen to That Money Show every single week, because we bring in the best mortgage advisors, property experts that will actually give you information on how to get yourself to that place. It sounds really, really difficult, but people are still doing it. So believe, guys, keep educating yourselves and you will get there. Anyway, stick around, because straight after this, I'm going to be joined by Faith Archer, money blogger, with much more with less.
Fubar Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
It got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed. All the OGs had gone and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23. And was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
And I know conversion therapy doesn't work because one of the most popular conversion therapy camps in America, I watched a documentary, it is a two-week-long programme. They all share a room for the week. Now, look, I don't want to insinuate too much, but my one hope is that if they do get caught, they adopt a parenting tactic of making them smoke the whole packet. Oh, you like sucking cock, do you? Well, you're not leaving this room until all of these cocks have been sucked.
Politics Uncensored.
They can't turn off your water because water is a human right. It's not like internet, which we can talk about.
Are you saying we should all stop paying?
I'm not saying we should all stop paying. I think no one should have to pay.
Their argument would be prices are going up. We need all this money because we have to invest in our ageing Victoria infrastructure, which hasn't, there's been no new infrastructure built in sewage, whatever, since the Victorian era. How would you respond to that?
They're talking out of their backside. It's bullshit of the highest order.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. But it's not just me right now on the show, because joining me is Faith Archer from Much More With Less. Faith, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. And I'm really excited to talk about this because Much More With Less definitely follows a lot of the philosophies that I agree with in life. I mean, one of my favorite sayings is kind of live within your means or live below your means even. So I'm really excited to kind of dive in and understand what inspired you to write Much More With Less in the first place.
Actually, it originally came as it was a charity fundraising thing. I was doing a sponsored project to live on very low cost for food. And then I decided to take it a step further and look far wider than frugal food. I'm actually, my background is a personal finance journalist, and we'd made a big decision as a family to leave London and move to the country. I was freelance. My husband was able to go back to working for the charity sector. And so it was looking at the kind of quality of life, really good quality of life we could have while living on a lot less money than our incomes had been in London.
So you were kind of practicing what you preached before you started preaching about it. Is that right?
Very much so. I would like to feel, with all the stuff I write about money, that I definitely do follow some of my own precepts.
Okay. And was it a cold turkey moment? Was it a switch that flicked in your head where you wanted to try living more like this? Or was it a gradual thing that you did over time?
I think to a certain amount it was gradual, because we'd already had the situation that I'd gone on maternity leave. And so our income had dropped at that point. And we had made some decisions prior to that to almost enable us to live on less money. When we moved house, we didn't take out the biggest possible mortgage because we wanted to have that potential that I wouldn't necessarily have to go back into a high earning job, because we could still cover our bills. And part of the move to the country was buying a distinctly less expensive property so that we could clear our mortgage altogether.
Oof, I think that's the goal, right? In life, I mean, actually...
It felt like the dream, yeah.
It does feel like the dream now, but I feel like the dream now is to get the mortgage in the first place, let alone to be paying it off. But
very true,
We can,
I think one of the things that budgeting can do for you is help free up money to put towards your vision, towards your goals. And if home ownership is one of those, you're not going to get on the housing ladder without working really hard at it.
I agree exactly what you said. It doesn't really matter what the goal is. What we're trying to do here is allow you to achieve it, to achieve those financial goals and not let them seem so far away. And budgeting effectively, I actually can't think of any other solution, to be honest. You need to manage your money and manage it well, and for you to be able to, you know, start getting one step closer to that end line. So let's talk about it then. You really lent into it and you started talking about it a lot more, and you started living it evidently by moving out of the city and into the country. So how did it progress, and what stage are we at now in terms of the way that you live your life?
I think one of the things I really wanted to emphasize was all the things you could do with limited cash. That it wasn't like your life just stopped and you had to sit shivering in a corner eating baked beans. You know, it's kind of, if you really put a certain amount of effort in to reduce your costs and search out the fun things to do that are free or require limited spending, you could still have a good time. When we moved, my kids were quite young. So I've got two children, and at the time they were 6 and 4. Put it this way, one of them is now studying for A-levels and the other one for GCSE. So we're a bit further down the line now.
Got it. You're all very used to the life that you're living. So I do want to kind of talk about the blog and what you've written about and a lot of the messaging that you've put out there. Like you said, it's about the fact that you can live life without having to constantly be spending. There are other ways to enjoy yourself. So can you share some of the kind of, let's say, highest level strategies that some people can employ to practice what you're talking about?
A couple of things. One of them is to get down and dirty with your finances. Actually get those bank statements out, the credit cards out. See where your money is going. One of the best tools that I've used to get control of my spending was doing a spending diary. You know, actually, whether you're writing it down with a pen and paper, or I'm a big fan of my Excel spreadsheets, actually tracking everything I was spending so I knew where my money was going. And then not just writing it down, but also reflecting on it. And, you know, what did this mean? Were there things I could cut, starting with pruning things like direct debits and recurring payments? Which payments could I cut? Which payments could I get a better deal? Where could I switch? So I think being mindful about what I spent was definitely one big component of it.
I love this approach, and it's something that I tell everyone to get started. You, like you said, you have to just face the cold, hard truth, get those ugly, bank statements out and just start looking. And one of the most incredible things that I noticed when I did this for the first time a couple of years ago, before I started really trying to share personal finances myself, was just by looking, often you'll make some immediate wins. You'll see things that pretty specifically straight away that you're like, oh my God, there's a subscription leaking out of my bank account. I haven't touched that subscription pretty much in the past year. Why am I still paying it? Well, number two, what is another way that I found it isn't just kind of you see something, you're like, oh, I'll cancel that payment straight away. But just by looking, you'll become a little bit more mindful, a little bit more conscious of where your money is going. And you'll think to yourself, do you know what? In a month's time, I'm going to have to review this again, or I've decided I will be reviewing this again. And I don't want to see those numbers anywhere near as high. I can't believe I'm spending X amount on eating out every single month. And even though it feels normal for me last month, now with a bit of mindfulness and knowing that I'm going to be looking again, those numbers just start to naturally, you know, pull themselves back. I don't know if it's like, you know, future you will be judging you in a way, and that has some kind of effect. I don't know if you felt the same.
I definitely did. I think that's part of the power of a spending diary. Just knowing you're going to have to write it down can make you hesitate sometimes at the tilt, you know, can make you not get out that contactless card. I think Nigella Lawson had a saying about, she reckons she lost weight when she broke her leg. And it wasn't so much that she couldn't ask people to get her a piece of cake. She just felt embarrassed about asking them to get her the second and third pieces of cake. And so when you've got a spending diary, when it's down in black and white, then you can look at it and think, oh, what do I really want to do with my money? You know, what is it I really want to achieve? Whether it's getting that foot on the housing ladder, or it's the holiday of the lifetime, or it's getting out of debt. And then you can look at the spending and think, is that actually getting me any closer to my goals?
Absolutely.
Am I spending the money in a way that makes sense and the way I want to live my life? And if not, what can you do to shrink or delete that spending?
Yeah, it's just that kind of switch over from just getting on and just going by as is, and just, you know, not having any idea or awareness, to actually being mindful and understanding that you're now looking at this and you have some level of control and it is up to you. You don't just have to get by day to day and just look at your bank account at the end of the month and be like, oh, there is a bit of money in there. Oh, I can save, something like that. It's completely flipping the script on that kind of stuff. But I suppose one, I would say, warning sign or thing that does happen to some people is they become over engrossed in the numbers. They start to budget excessively. They're constantly monitoring every penny they spend, which on the one hand is, it can be good practice in the first few months as you kind of learn the two extremities of, you know, never budgeting to over budgeting. But I like to always say that there's a happy middle ground. There's a life where you can live life not in the budget sheet, but spend, you know, mindfully at the same time. So passing that to you, how do you talk to people about being mindful, being aware of their spending, but also not limiting themselves and still enjoying their life today?
Well, I think it partly does depend on how tight your budget is. When we first moved, only one of my children was at school. My husband, you know, we'd come to the end of a contract in London. He didn't have a job to go to. Money was really tight. And so at that point, I was tracking every penny we spent. And I had the kind of mindset that basically spend nothing at all. So I was having to justify what I did spend. And I think once my work picked up with two kids now at secondary school and my husband got a job and, you know, things started looking up, we had a bit more leeway, then we didn't need to be as tight with the spending. So we could set up all the bills, fixed expenses, saving, any debt payments, set those to go up with direct debits, and then know that we had more leeway with the rest of the cash. And the other thing I'd say in terms of perhaps not focusing too, not getting too caught up in the numbers and restricting all spending is, you know, again, coming back, what is it that you want to do with your life? And if you want to enjoy life, then getting creative and thinking of ways that you can enjoy it, but with more limited spending. So, for example, we did a lot of outings, but we did quite a lot of taking either snacks or picnics with us.
Yes.
So that we could still go to the place. My kids got used to the fact that we would either swerve the gift shop or go through at a pretty fast pace, so that they weren't accustomed to the idea that any time we went out or visited somewhere special, that they came back with gifts.
Yeah. And I would love to kind of dive into a few ways that you've done this. You mentioned like the outdoor outings and things like that, taking food with you. There are really easy ways to enjoy your time and enjoy your weekend or enjoy your free time without having to constantly be thinking about where you're spending it. But I also think it's important to mention something you said right at the beginning, which was for a period of time, you did have to really watch the money that was leaving your account and spend really mindfully. And I think that this is something that I always like to tell people as well. Your budget isn't fixed in time. You can constantly be iterating it month to month, year to year. It changes as you change. And it's really important. Often I'm on social media and I hear Dave Ramsey, the famous financial commentator out in the US. And he says something that's kind of cold and kind of hard on people. But it's important to say. And there are people that are calling up. They're in severe levels of debt, horrible levels of debt. And he says, I'm sorry, but the only way you're going to get out of this is you have to cut back all of your spending right now. Like, you have no other choice at this period of your life. If you can move back home, you need to move back home. If you can sell your car, you need to sell it. Like, you just have to get out of it. And that's the period of your life you're in right now. People sometimes don't want to hear that. But I think the other side is also important. The idea that it does get better. It will get better. You just have to know that these times change. And like you mentioned with your life, things changed. You weren't always having to watch everything. There were times where you could be a bit more malleable. So yeah, I would like to kind of like ask, if someone is living through this right now, they're feeling a bit tight, they've budgeted or they're budgeting quite hard because of the period of life they're in, what kind of experiences can they go on? What should they be looking to do? How can they still enjoy their life and take it to the fullest potential whilst also being really mindful of their money?
I think get creative. You know, whether you're sitting brainstorming loads of ideas or you're looking at all the resources out there on social media, on blogs, in articles, you know, what is it you like to do? And then how can you do it with minimal spending? So one of the things I say is shop from the contents of your home first. So are there, go through the whole of your wardrobe. Are there clothes you haven't worn for ages that you can get out and enjoy them all over again? Is there food in your kitchen cupboards, fridge and freezer that you haven't used? And you can get creative, look up recipes online, borrow books from the library so that you can make nice meals, maybe invite people round, do potluck suppers where people bring food to you rather than having to pay to eat out. What is it that you enjoy doing for hobbies? Have you still got stuff that you haven't used yet? So I quite like craft stuff. I've got projects, embroidery, knitting, art materials that I haven't used. You know, what can I rediscover and enjoy doing? Look at the listings for your local area, think again about what your interests are. Are there free exhibitions? Are there art galleries, museums that you can visit? Are there walks that you can do where you can find routes? Can you meet up with friends at, you don't necessarily have to sign up for an expensive gym. Is there a local leisure centre that's not for profit that you can meet to go for a swim or play badminton? Thinking about what is it that you enjoy. You know, if it's getting fit, I said you don't have to join an expensive gym, but there are things like Couch to 5K, the NHS podcast that can help get you running, where basically what you need is a decent pair of trainers and socks and a decent sports bra if you're a woman, and then off you go. So it's trying to think, what are the things that you like doing and where you can do them with spending only a limited amount?
That was incredible. I think you've just organised my next 4 weekend plans in a row just then. And if you didn't hear anything you liked just then, I'd say last option, just use ChatGPT. It exists for a reason. Get creative with it. If you're not a creative person, use something that is creative. Faith, thank you so much for your time. And I can tell people to go and definitely check out Much More With Less. And anything else you'd like to say to them before you leave?
My blog and X is much_less. But I just say, you know, enjoy taking control of your money and planning for the future you'd like to have.
I like that. Well, Faith, thank you so much for your time. There you go. That was Faith from Much More With Less. And one of the best conversations I think I've ever had on the topic of money. So definitely go and check out more and get creative. ChatGPT, send us in on at That Money Show. Anything that you've decided to do this weekend for free. I want to hear your free plans, mainly because I want you to inspire me, because I need some ideas. Anyway, it's time for Money Tip of the Week. It's a quick, short, practical piece of advice for you to take away after this show is finished, and it will immediately allow you to get better with your money. And it's on the topic of that little bit of a money overhaul, money review, taking a look at the cold, hard truth of where your spending is. And it's a bit of a subscriptions overhaul. What I would like you to do, and it shouldn't take too long, is take a look at the last month of your spending. Take a look at every subscription or recurring payment that comes out of your bank and decide very aggressively, does it need to keep coming out? For example, if you are spending on Netflix and Amazon Prime, which one are you actually watching right now? And if you're on a monthly subscription, can you cancel one whilst you watch the other and then do the opposite when you need to go back to Netflix? Just as an example, but please do go through every single subscription and think to yourself really harshly, do I still need this or not? Now, I want you to do this, or set a reminder to do this, every month for the next 12 months. You're going to realize very quickly that in months 3, 4, 5, 6, probably, there's nothing more to do. You've already cancelled, you're as lean as you can be. But in month 7, what's going to happen is an annual subscription is going to pop up. Your car insurance, your council tax, whatever it is. That's why I want you to do it every single month, so you can really negotiate down the big ones, the big contracts that you agreed a year ago and you completely forgot were coming up again. That's what's time to do. Subscriptions overhaul. And if you can't cancel, or if they were not letting you cancel, call up the customer services and fight like hell, because sometimes they'll just make that exception just for you. Anyway, stick around, because after this short break, I'm going to be joined by Natalie Scott, award-winning money coach.
Foobar Radio.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Mr. Later Williams, hello. Mate, can we just address that you did Strictly Come Dancing?
I know, people were quite upset about that, to be fair, but listen, not the first musical theatre performer to be on Strictly, won't be the last. I've never watched a full season from the start to the end. So when it actually got 2 hours out, whoa, like there's so many different styles. I was like, oh, and Nikita, I love him, but he was really pushing me to be the best that I could be.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
And we've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
It got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed, all the OGs had gone, and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23 and was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
And I know conversion therapy doesn't work because one of the most popular conversion therapy camps in America, I watched a documentary, it is a 2-week long program. They all share a room for the week. Now, look, I don't want to insinuate too much, but my one hope is that if they do get caught, they adopt a parenting tactic of making them smoke the whole pack here. Oh, you like sucking cock, do you? Well, you're not leaving this room until all of these cocks have been sucked.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. Here's an interesting term for you all, money dysmorphia. I don't know if you've heard of it, but a lot of you might have, seeing as the searches for it have gone up 136% over the past year. But what on earth is it? Why are people concerned about it? Why are people searching it? And is there a chance that you, listening to this right now, potentially suffer from it? Well, joining me now on the show is Natalie Scott, an award-winning money coach, talk all things about it. Natalie, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I am doing very well. And I'm really interested to dive into this idea of money dysmorphia. I'd actually not heard of it myself. So, I mean, can you explain to me and everyone listening, what is money dysmorphia? And is this something we need to be aware of?
Oh, most definitely. So with money dysmorphia, it refers to like a distorted perception of your financial situation. So sometimes an individual may feel financially insecure or inadequate despite having stable or substantial finances. So it's almost like similar to body dysmorphia. Everything's okay, but you don't believe that it is. And on the flip side, you can be someone who hasn't got it all going on. You haven't got it all together, your finances, but you believe you do. And this tricks your mind to thinking that your finances are okay. So therefore, you spend more money. And that's why a lot of people complain sometimes that they have more months than they do have money. So it's a dysmorphia on both ends of the spectrum.
That's super interesting. So essentially, it's the idea that the way you think about your money does not align with that number written in the bank account. But where does this come from? Like, why is this happening in the first place? I mean, my gut instinct is telling me this is something to do with a lack of education. So it might be kind of a mental thing, but, you know, we're not educated to know that this much money means we're okay or this much money means we're not okay. So we're making it up ourselves the whole time, and it just might not align with what practice actually says.
No, I agree. And I think it's a combination of so many different factors. So I always say how we are with money will stem from our childhood. So what we actually saw growing up, where it pertains to finances, how did our parents handle money? How did they spend it? What did they say about money? And then, of course, factors like the education system, not being actually taught how money works and how to make it work to benefit us, other than the opposite. So I think it's a combination of both of those factors, not just we didn't learn this in school, but the fact is, what did we see growing up about money? And that actually determines how comfortable we are with money and whether we see it as a taboo or not.
So interesting. So there's two sides. It's not only what we didn't learn, but it's also what we did learn and what we did learn incorrectly. So, for example, if you lived in a house where they live paycheck to paycheck, constantly spending the last penny, but spending it excessively, and you just saw that as the norm, you might completely adopt that approach. If you've got money, it's there to be spent. It's there to have a good time with it, even though that savings pot, that emergency fund, those investments, that pension is sitting on zero, which is a really interesting other way to go about it. So what are some of, I suppose, the key signs that money dysmorphia is happening to you right now?
To me personally?
Not to you personally. You're a money coach, so I'm hoping you're good. You've got a good image of what's going on with your money. But someone listening to this right now,
I think a lot of times is that we're in a cost of living crisis at the moment, and it's really hard. Inflation keeps growing at a rapid movement. So I think sometimes we're We're not sure how to spend our money, how best to make it work for us. So we're struggling. And I feel that at times, some people are aware that they're struggling, but they don't do anything to get themselves out of it. And therefore, they fall deeper and deeper into a hole of not knowing what to do. On the other side of it, you have people that think they're in control of their finances, but they're still trying to keep their head above water. So I think we're in a space at the moment where if you haven't got certain things in place, i.e. an emergency fund or a sinking fund or some kind of saving pots around you, then it's very easy for you to drown in the current climate that we're living in. Because again, it's a weird one to say, but I think with the climate that we're living in and government is quite uncertain. Bills are increasing, people's bills increase all the time, but their wages may not increase. So we have to start thinking smartly about our finances and how we can best protect them while we're going through this crisis.
It almost seems quite difficult to ever figure out whether you have this money dysmorphia, because ultimately the idea of the dysmorphia part is that you think you're doing the right thing, and no one can really stop you until they start to really reveal what's going on behind the scenes.
I agree. So for instance, say you've got debt, but you're still overspending, you're impulse shopping, then that's money dysmorphia, because you really haven't got any business spending money when you've got debt. So you have to decide what's more important. The debt, to clear it, that's more important right now. But then in another breath, you may have someone who has debt. They want to enjoy the little treat here and there. And I don't think anything's wrong with that, because it's kind of boring focusing completely on paying debt.
Absolutely.
And not having anything for yourself. But there has to be a balance, right? So I think there's no problem doing both, spending little, clearing down your debt, and also saving as well. But I think with the dysmorphia, it's because it's so a clouding of judgment, it's kind of hard to decipher what to do, because there's so much information telling you, oh, you need to save, but you need to clear off your debt, but you still need to treat yourself, self-care this and self-care that. So it can be quite confusing at times for a person who's trying to navigate, because everyone's situation is different. What I would say is, what needs to be cleared off? If the debt is big, get it cleared. If you're able to start saving a little bit, then save a little bit as well. But if your main concern is to pay your debt off, so after that you can feel that, I can breathe a bit, then pay your debt off. It's going to change depending on the person.
I'm super interested to ask, does money dysmorphia only happen to those not well off? So does it only happen to people that don't have a lot of money that think that they do? Or does it apply to people across the full financial spectrum?
It can apply to everybody. I've worked with clients who have a lot of money, and I've worked with clients who don't have a lot of money, and they both still come to me. And it's because some of them, let's talk about the ones that do have money, because I think sometimes we talk a lot about those who don't.
Yeah.
And we kind of understand their stories because we've been there. But the ones that do have money, who are earning tens of thousands of pounds a month, they still struggle with their finances. They don't know how to best budget. Sometimes they feel like they have more money than they do, okay? Because they're so used to earning so much money coming in, and therefore they struggle. And because they earn all this money, they then take on the savior complex of taking care of everyone else around them. And at the end of it, they're left at a deficit because there's no finances there. So again, thinking that they've got this money, wearing this cloak of armor to be the person that's going to save everybody, they're having their own financial dysmorphia because they're doing it, giving it out, and not realizing that they're not left with anything at the end of the month or the beginning of the month. So I think that it's a challenge on both spectrums, whether you've got a lot of money or whether you don't.
Have you ever spoken to clients or people where potentially even the opposite to that happens? They've got a lot of money, they've got a savings fund, they've got an emergency fund, they're investing, they're saving, their pension is full, their financial health is looking really, really positive, but they just can't bring themselves to spend a penny. They can't spend on themselves, they can't spend, you know, they can't increase their living standard in the slightest. And you're telling them, spend, like, go on holiday, relax a little bit, you know, you can spend a little bit of money, because it's not all about saving for future. You're that version of current, you has to enjoy it. I suppose maybe one of the key examples of this is people that get into their pension, they stop earning money, they've built up this huge pot of savings, and then they struggle to start spending it. And you're like, well, what have you been saving up for this entire time? And they're like, well, it's this weird feeling of the pot reducing rather than increasing or staying the same. I would love to know how you would go about talking to someone in that position.
So I've been in a situation like that myself, and I like to call it money hoarder. Money hoarder, you've got all this money, you've done the hard part, you've saved, and now it's time to spend on yourself. Why is that so difficult? So again, it comes back to childhood. So say, for instance, you witnessed your family really struggle with their finances. There was never any money there. And now you're in a position where you're earning all this money. You've made all these savings and now it's your turn to spend. You find it difficult because you almost feel, again, the financial dysmorphia, you feel like the money is not going to return. You feel like, if I spend this money, am I going to get this money back? When we know you're going to get it back, because every month you're earning a decent amount of money. But I can tell you that, but you have to believe it. And a lot of times people don't believe it, even though the stats are looking right at them and the proof is in the pudding. They find it difficult to spend their money. So I always say, in situations like that, what is it that you like to do? If you weren't earning any money, what are some of the things you'd like to do? And a lot of people say travel, explore new places, etc. So I'm like, okay, let's put a little bit of that money, all that money that you have that you think's not going to return, let's put a little bit of it to the side. And we don't have to spend it straight away, because that's the problem. It's spending it straight away. And let's put X amount every single month. Let's give ourselves a timeline of 6 months. And after those 6 months, we spend it. So you have to drop feed it in. You can't tell them to go and spend £1,000 tomorrow on a holiday. They won't do it. But if you send a little plan, make a plan with them and be accountable, then set a plan, they'll do it. That works better.
I think this is brilliant. And I would love to kind of, between me and you, or ask you even, to address people listening to this thinking, oh, that one of those scenarios might be me. I'm not sure. Maybe it's me, maybe it's not. Or they're uncomfortable basically listening to this conversation because, like we said, it's dysmorphia, right? It's this idea that they don't want to admit this is happening to them. What kind of key next steps can they take to, number one, identify whether or not this is a problem, and then number two, start to find the solutions to fix it for them?
Well, the first thing I would say is to have a wealth date with yourself. So a wealth date is when you know you're going to get paid, whether you have your own business or you work a 9-to-5. If you work a 9-to-5, you're going to get your pay slip, so you know what you're going to get. Sit down with your finances and look at what's actually coming in that month, and look at your projection for the month ahead. How much are you looking to spend? Most people know what's coming in, but they can't give you a figure of what goes out every month. So I want you to get into the habit of looking at what's coming out. Now, as you start budgeting and looking at what's coming out of X, Y, Z, your wants and your needs, I need you then to make some space for something that you really want to do. And it can be anything. It can be as silly as you think, but it's what you want to do. Make a space for that and start seeing if you have any disposable income. Most people who feel this is more fear do have the disposable income, by the way, but they end up, again, I'm a savior, I'm going to give it to who needs it. What about yourself? So just put something down on a spreadsheet of what it is you want to do and start seeing, can I actually do this? And most people can. Again, it's not a fast track to be like, do it tomorrow, but set yourself a plan and accountable for yourself to say, I'm going to do this for myself in 6 months' time, in 2 months' time, and so forth. So I think what we need to do is just look at our finances with a fine tooth comb. Because when we know what's actually coming out, then we can actually decide, okay, do I have the money to do the things that my heart desires? And if the answer is yes, okay, when do I want to do that? Let's start working backwards.
I like it. Instead of trying to guess, actually take a look at the cold hard numbers and make factual decisions based on logic rather than, I think that's the right answer and I can keep going that way. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for your time. Where can people find out more?
Sure. So people can find me across all socials under at Natalie Scott Empowers. And obviously on my website, natalie.scottempowers.co.uk as well. And yeah, I'm across all social medias on that.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. And thank you for helping us understand money dysmorphia. Hopefully we've helped some people here today. Well, there we go. That was Natalie Scott, a money coach, talking to us all about money dysmorphia, a really important topic, something hard to identify, but really important to figure out now. So if you felt uncomfortable at any stage during that conversation, it's probably time to start following some of Natalie's actions. I know that some of those have applied to me as well in the past, and there's a reason why searches are going up so much at the moment. So you're not alone, and if you need to speak to charities or advisors or anything like that, the conversation is often the best place for you to start. Anyway, it's time for audience questions. You guys DM us every single week on us at That Money Show on Instagram. And if you haven't, feel free to. It is at That Money Show on Instagram. You can ask a question, you can do it on the live stream right now, and I like to answer them because, yeah, it's a money show. We might as well answer your questions, guys. Starting off with first question from Sarah, who says, hey, I'm 25 and thinking about buying my first home. I'm totally overwhelmed by all of the mortgage brokers out there. How do I know which one is the best for me? What should I be asking them before deciding on the right one? Well, I have just gone through this entire process. So at the age of 25, you're thinking about this. Unbelievable, Sarah. I'm very impressed. Remember, the average first-time property age in this country is 36. So you are smashing it. How do you find a mortgage broker that is right for you? Number one, remember, there are paid and free options. So if you can't decide, it's always fine to start talking to a few free ones and going down the process that way. No harm, no foul, if that makes sense. But number two, I would look at two or three things. Firstly, reviews online. What do people say about them? Are they good? Are they bad? Look at it that way. Number two, can you get one through a referral? Has a friend used one before? A family member? That's a great way for you to really get that trust straight away with your mortgage broker. Number three, like I said, speak to a few. You don't have to settle with one. There are a lot of free options out there. They get paid on providing the service at the end of it by the bank or by the mortgage provider. So that's one really clever way to go about it. Speak to three or four and get a gist for it, the one that you feel, you know, a vibe with, because they're a really important person in your life. And lastly, and this is one that I actually haven't heard this piece of advice before, and that is ask people or ask your mortgage broker, what's your incentive here? If you're not getting paid by me, how are you getting paid? And how do I know that you're going to give me a fair service? And most mortgage brokers are more than happy to share with you how they're being compensated and how it's going to work for them. And the fact that they still utilize all of the main providers when it comes to mortgages. They're not going to choose a mortgage based on who compensates them the most. If they're secretive and they're not want to give you that information, or they want to push you towards a certain provider because of a certain kickback scheme, that might not be the one for you. And then you can move on to the next. So how about that? Next question from Tom. Tom has asked, hey, I've just moved house after a pretty expensive Christmas, and I've ended up with some debt that I'm struggling to pay off. What is the best way to get back on track and start working my way out of it? Any tips to handle the stress of it all? That's super stressful, guys. Like, I absolutely feel for you, Tom. Also, you're freelance, which means that you work from job to job. And it's really, really hard to kind of go about this. So let's talk about the best ways to pay off debt in the first place. You have two methods, okay? Avalanche and snowball. They're the most common terms. Number one is you pay off the smallest debt absolute amount first. If you've got a £5 debt and a £50 debt, you pay off the £5 debt first. What this is going to do is you're going to give you that kick, that quick win. Psychologically, you're going to think, yes, I've done one. I can do it. I'm going to move on to the next one. And you keep paying them off that way. Number two is the more mathematically optimal way, which is the avalanche method, where you're going to pay the highest interest first. That is the first one you want to do. So if you've got a debt that's got 10% interest and one that's got 20% interest, regardless of the actual amounts, you pay off the 20% interest debt first. Mathematically, that is going to be the most optimal way for you to pay off your debt. I have a slightly different take on both of those. What I would like to say to you is, firstly, if they're high interest debts, these are, because they're normally the ones that you want to pay off first. Mortgages are a bit of a different conversation topic because they're low interest debts, or they tend to be lower interest debts. But for high interest debts, as long as the absolute amount that you owe next month is less than this month, I do not care which method you use. You are moving in the right direction. Rather than be analysis paralysis, where you can't make a decision, so you do nothing, as long as you are taking action to reduce that debt aggressively, you are doing things in the right way. So that is what I would start to say. Live a bit more frugally and start to pay it off in that manner as you can in this short period of your life until it's all gone. I don't care which of the two methods you use, mathematically optimal or psychologically optimal. They both work as long as next month's debt is less than this month's debt. Make sure at the same time you're trying to reduce taking on any new debts, because that's like trying to fill up a bucket with a hole in it. Never going to work. And then lastly, you said any tips to handle the stress of it all. If you are struggling, there are debt charities for free online. A quick Google will find them for you. Now, the benefit of them, and why I would always recommend speaking to them, is these are sometimes experts in the debt topics, and they will talk you through solutions that you might not have even figured out or understood were an option for you. A quick phone call, expert, hey, have you decided or have you looked into switching to a 0% 22-month balance transfer card? You might be like, what's going on here? This is what I mean. There are tactics and techniques that they can use. Anyway, if you've got another question, please DM us on at That Money Show on Instagram and I will try and answer it next week, because that is all we've got time for today. So thank you to our two guests for their time on the show. Remember, you can listen live on FUBAR Radio if you download the app. We're on every podcasting platform. I am That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show, and you're officially better with your money.
FUBAR Radio.